Is the promise of the United States fading? In today's pivotal episode, we're diving headfirst into a conversation that might just redefine the nation's future. Joining us is Jack Decker, a visionary challenging the very fabric of American federalism and our whole government with his bold proposition, States First Amendment. Together, we'll unravel the origins of the document, confront the shortcomings of our current government and our system, and debate the transformative solutions that are proposed in the States First Amendment. I'm your host, Sal Asante, ready to guide you through this groundbreaking dialogue. Here at We the Patriots, our mission is to ignite critical thinking and foster community-driven change through unfiltered political discourse, just like what you're about to hear. So let's sit back and enjoy the ride, and let's embark on this journey of exploration together. First of all, what is the State's First Amendment and why? Why did you start writing it?
The State's First Amendment is to reverse the centralization of power in the United States. Is our founding fathers in the United States did not want a powerful central government. I mean, they kind of fought against one. And they meant for the powers to be invested in the states. And if you read the Constitution, if you really read it, it basically says, hey, whatever we don't outline here is reserved for the states and the individual. So they meant it for the states to have far more power. Unfortunately, we had federal politicians and we had federal bureaucrats, and they wanted more and more power. And so they started warping the Constitution to their purposes. There's two big ones. It's called the Welfare Clause and the Commerce Clause. And both of those clauses, to those that like a strong federal government, they were ones that were holding them back. So they warped the meaning of them.
Gotcha.
The welfare was the states coming to each other's protection, but they took it as welfare of the individual. Oh, now they can stick their nose into everything. Commerce Clause was just mean not having barriers between the states. They did, oh, we can then determine this. They'll stick their nose into commerce. And because of their warped interpretations, and you can research it. Just research Commerce Clause, Welfare Clause, U.S. Constitution. And you'll see how what it was meant to be. And you read about the founding fathers in their own words, what they felt those clauses actually meant. And then you see people that wanted a strong federal government, how they warped it, how they got the Supreme Court to go along with it. The first break in the barrier for, I don't like using federalists because federalists actually means states. Strong federal government was the Commerce Clauses was for railroad traffic. And a lot of people say, I've encountered this since I've been posting this amendment on Twitter. I've been answering a lot of questions. It's very interesting how people, oh no, this is not the way it should be. And they're just like, well, what would be without the federal government, regulating commerce? Okay, well, for more than the first 100 years of our country, federal government had no role in it. It was in, I think, 1888 that they finally cracked the Commerce Clause and they made an exception for railroads. And just like anything, once the dam has a crack, it just bursts open. Once they can crack into it, then they can widen it. Mm-hmm. Just like the Social Security. A lot of people don't know because they don't read up on it. But Social Security is only meant for widows and orphans. Widows, as in female widows, not widowers, just widows and orphans. Wow. And then that was the crack they got in. Well, and think about it. The pitch was, oh, don't you want to help out widows? Don't you want to help out orphans? I mean, talk about two groups say, yeah, I'm against those damn widows. You know, screw those orphans. Tiny Tim, let's throw them into the fire. So, oh, we can't do that. So again, crack. And then they just look at what it is now. But with my amendment, it is to essentially reverse the crack that how they warped the Commerce Clause and the Welfare Clause, so that now the federal government can dictate everything. They can stick their noses into everything. And that was never what the Founding Fathers meant for the federal government to be. The federal government was always meant to be a very limited, very small government. And it was to be basically in subservience of the states, not the other way around. I mean, originally, until again, cracking the law, cracking the dam, senators were appointed by a state senate would appoint two senators to the U.S. Senate.
Okay, so
that's not democratic at all. That's elitism. That's elitism. They should be directly elected. Cracking the dam, opening it on up. Not that. So what my thing is, there are 6 sections to it. I don't know if you want, I can get up if you want me to read it and go section by section.
I think that it wouldn't be a bad idea to go through it section by section. I think it would be strong. You don't necessarily have to read it, but if it's really not too long either.
It's not meant to be long. The first section is just the federal government cannot do or regulate the federal First Amendment, states First Amendment, section 1. The federal government cannot do, regulate, and or fund what the states can technically do, regulate, or fund themselves. This puts the federal government back into, it restricts their roles, okay?
It directly implicates their whole roles based on everything that they've been doing over the past century and a half. Century and a half,
basically, again, they're cracking it. And it was too. You have to understand, the Welfare Clause and the Commerce Clause were not attacked at the same time. They were chipped at.
Last century. Yeah.
Yeah, they were chipped at over time. Correct. And they had to get, basically what they had to do is they had to get judges in the U.S. Supreme Court that wanted a strong federal government. Initial court was just like, nope. Took them 100 years until they got a federal court going, yeah, for the railroads. Right? We can see the railroads. And that was the crack. And that's what they went in and they started pushing it out. But this, the first section just basically says, if the states can do it, they're to do it, and the federal government can't do it. Now, some people that attack this amendment said, oh my God, then we're having a confederation of states. You know, we're all independent. We're all going to, everyone's going to succeed from each other. And there are some people that are libertarians who are trying to get the New Hampshire to succeed from the country. I don't know, a lot of normal people know that that's what a lot of libertarians are trying to do. They're trying to get libertarians to relocate to New Hampshire. And they're going to try to get to succeed from the union. I think I personally, I'm not in favor of that. I think we got a really good system. We just need to fix it.
So that was going to be one of my questions. I think it would be pertinent to answer it now. So you're not in favor per se of separating the states out into their own individual unions, but you'd rather have them be stronger entities inside of a less strong federal government.
Yes and no. The federal government, if the states can do it, the states should do it.
Okay.
There are certain things that the states just cannot do.
So can you talk about a couple of those things? Like, for instance, how would you feel about
U.S. military
defense?
U.S. military.
The first one that came to my mind.
Yeah. And there's also the State Department. It would be beyond stupidity to have the states going out trying to have their own, setting up their own treaties with different countries. Because we have a unique situation. We have a government that has never existed before in history. And if we screw it up, it may never happen again. I want to protect that, preserve the good parts of it. We just have to get it back to what the founding fathers wanted, and not that they're holy or cannot be questioned. But the founding fathers never viewed that themselves. I mean, they have an amendment process built into the Constitution because they're like, we might not figure it all out here, folks. I mean, the law, you know, the truth of the matter is that our government is partially a result of compromise. Okay. When our founding fathers wanted to build together, the northern states wanted to have the House, what we would call the House of Representatives for their time, more like the House of Commons. Think of Parliament. We're from England. Okay. We're from England. The northern states wanted to be just like we're in England. Well, just be democratic. You know, the more people you have in your state, well, the more votes you get. The southern state going, what? Then New York's going to dictate everything to the rest of the country. And so the southern states are like, no. Two votes, one or two votes per state. That's it. Okay. We did have truly an Einstein, a genius. His name was Benjamin Franklin. Beyond doubt, genius.
One of the most fascinating people ever. If you have time to go read a couple of biographies from
Humboldt,
it's fantastic. Speaking to the viewers, he is a fantastic read. Very interesting life. He had many muses.
And he adapted himself to what he needed to be. When he was the diplomat in Europe, he put on the whole Appalachian bumpkin persona. Was not in that in real life at all. But he adapted to what the needs required. Benjamin Franklin came across this big debate. And this could have caused us not to be a United States. Right. Southern states wanted a Senate. Essentially what now we call Senate. And the southern states won House of Representatives. And Benjamin Franklin's Einstein move was, let's have both.
How about both?
And so we now have a U.S. Senate and a U.S. House of Representatives. Yep. And they have served. They have served in the past. Again, we need to, this amendment is going to try to help make them what they were should be. But essentially, what is the old saying is, it's an old time saying. That laws go to the Senate to die.
No. Okay. So what you're saying though intrigues me a lot. Have you heard of Herb Kay or the 1964 plan? Okay. So I'll share this with you after our show because it's a very comprehensive, very well thought out. I wouldn't necessarily agree with a lot of these solutions, but the problems are well identified, I would say, even by someone like yourself, you'd agree with them, in America especially. And one of his true beliefs was that we have to, in a way, remove, he thought, at least the Senate from being directly democratic. And I find it interesting to have you mention something similar.
Well, it used not to be. I mean, the original Senate was appointed by the state's senates. Each state had a Senate. The only state that doesn't have it is Nebraska. They have what's called a unit. Unicameral. I would not go that way, and there's reasons for that. And maybe if we went talked about the further sections, that will, I think, is even dealt with in like the next section here. Let me call up the next one. Well, section 2 is all U.S. senators can propose and vote on legislative bills from their states. All U.S. House of Representatives can propose and vote on legislative bills from their districts and their state capitals. And all congressional committee and subcommittee meetings must be conducted by way of video conferencing. This is just, deals with parliamentary issues. Um, in the Senate and House, you have to be in the Senate or the House to vote, technically. That's why you have, like, if, I don't know if you've heard in history where they've had actual senators that are essentially almost on their deathbeds or very, very sick, being rolled into the Senate to vote on their vote on the bill.
Right.
They have loosened that since, just like they recently loosened it because Fetterman refused to wear a suit and tie. So they loosened the dress code for the Senate because of him.
And then they had to rein it back in because everyone started making fun of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, oh, my God. I was so, so hoping. Have you ever seen these dinosaur costumes that you
yeah, walk around? Yeah, the Invisible.
I was so hoping that Rand Paul would walk in and do a speech in the dinosaur costume, just make fun of it, you know? By the way, that guy, I think that stroke did him some good. If you listen to some of the things he's been saying, like, go, holy smokes, I don't disagree with that. You know, I mean, Fetterman. Fetterman, the guy that had a stroke in the Congress.
I haven't heard much of him.
Yeah, do a little research on him. He's made some statements. I think it's because he just doesn't give a shit. He just does not care anymore. Before the stroke, he was a politician, just flat-out politician. After the stroke, I think he just doesn't give a shit anymore. That's why they had to change the House rules, because it gonna do it. Then he eventually, like, no, he now wears a suit, you know. But yeah, I'm very surprised by some of the statements he has made. Not that I don't know everything he's done, but I don't think he's the same person that he was before he had the stroke. And personally, I think he's probably a better person now. And he just doesn't care. He's just like, I don't think they can control him. And they're afraid the Democrats aren't going to do anything to him because, you're going to beat up on a stroke victim? Yeah, that looks really cool. And I don't think Republicans are beating up on him because, again, you're beating up on a stroke victim? That's not cool. But anyways, you have to, by parliamentary rules, the rules just means the rules of politics in a body. You have to physically make it. You have to propose your bill. When a senator proposes a bill, he can't just submit underneath the door and go, well, here's what. No, he has to go onto the House and propose this bill. And then you have to have someone like, do you second? And say, I wish the Senate, C-SPAN, would pull the camera back, because a lot of times those senators, they're talking to an empty chamber. They're acting my colleagues, there's no one there. They're just talking to themselves, but they're playing for the camera. Yeah. But so that's what the second section essentially enables them to basically telecommute to work now. Okay, that's what the whole part is. It still restricts them. Well, U.S. House of Representatives can vote and propose in their district or in their state capital. And as you'll see in a later section, why I did that for a very specific reason. But then the second section is where we talk about the senators. Third section. Each state gets one vote in U.S. House or U.S. Senate. That vote goes to that state's current governor. A current governor can serve as U.S. vice president, and governors cannot be compensated in any way or form for their service to the U.S. Senate or the office of the vice president. And that is how we take back the Senate. When our country was formed, there was two ways to get to the Capitol. One was by horse, and the other was by boat. Trains didn't exist at that time. The Industrial Revolution had not yet hit by that time, okay? And so what would happen would be, like Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, our country was an agricultural country. And so they would go back home to take care to plant, raise, harvest. And then once the harvest was in, U.S. House of Representatives and the U.S. Senators and the President would then journey to Washington, D.C. before the winter hit, before the roads became impassable. And then they would winter, that literally was what they called it. They would winter in Washington, D.C. And that's when when the federal government would be dealt with at that time. Mm. Would be, and then when winter ended, the roads thawed, the mud dried, and it was now possible for you to go back on those. And they're all mud roads. There's no pavement. There's no gravel. It's just mud road. You got into a city, you had bricks. Okay, that's how you had it. But then they would travel back to their farms and they would be done with politics for the year. You know, they would correspond with each other. We have fabulous correspondence between the founding fathers over the summers, over the harvest. Break.
Yep.
Yeah, the break. They would write to each other and some of them kept them. Although one of the most famous exchanges was after they were out of politics was between Adams and Jefferson. There we have their correspondence. It's just unbelievably fascinating. You know, even how they died was fascinating. You know, when one died, I think it was Jefferson, or it was Adams. He says, "Well, at least Jefferson lives," and Jefferson died on the same day. On July 4th. Yeah. You know, I think one of the things was Adam said, well, at least Jefferson lives. But no, they both died on that day, which is poetic in a way for a death for both of them. But anyway, so that's how our Congress worked. Our Congress was part-time. They did not look at it as being this, you know, this is aristocracy as well. Kind of what we had, rich people. There's no more aristocracy. I mean, we have actually, you can't hold a noble title in America. You can't. It's against our laws. But these are rich people. But they all made their money from farms. Okay. So, yeah, government's really good. I gotta go make money. You know? So they take off for the season and then they come back after harvest.
That's done. Interesting though. So when did they start or when did it, I guess, would it have started when Congress would have been a full time or they started living in the city?
It was again gradual. It was not all at once.
Right. It had to be.
I forget the exact date. I used to remember it. But what this does here I forget what the section is, the third section. What this does is acknowledges that our world has now changed. Okay. We're a perfect example of that right now. Okay. Where are you located? What city are you located in?
I'm out in New Jersey, Northern Jersey. So
what city?
We'll call it Montville, New Jersey.
Okay. I'm in Iowa City, Iowa. Okay. Yeah. What we're doing now was never possible back then.
Right.
Okay. So the reason why we had a Senate and a House of Representatives is because you couldn't do what this conversation, if we were to do this by exchanging letters back and forth, how many months would it be for us to do this exchange back and forth? Which at that time was actually common. Okay. You would have a conversation with someone back and forth, asking a question, and then they'd write you back their answers and it'd be this slow back and forth. But now we're doing it right now, instantaneous.
Correct.
Yep. We do not need to have the senators be in Washington, D.C.
There's no need.
There's no reason
not full time. However, I would say, and it is one thing I was curious about. Does your amendment propose that there is no longer any in person debating, any in person meetings?
No. Well, they have. I think it's in section 2. Let's see.
I believe
section 2, the part, all congressional committees and subcommittee meetings must be conducted by way of video conferencing. So they can still have debates. They just don't have to be next to each other. Okay. And I think that's actually good for our democracy and for our government to not have them be physically and next to each other. Washington, D.C., some people like calling it the swamp. It corrupts, I think, people. You see U.S. senators and U.S. House representatives, the new ones, they come in there, they're all idealistic. And then a lot of them just they become part of the machine. Are there exceptions to it? Yeah, but they're so rare, that's unreal. Ron Paul, his son Rand Paul. But they're rare. And also you have to understand, they love it there. U.S. senators and U.S. House of Representatives love being Washington, D.C. Yeah, they do not love being back in their home states. In their home states, the people view them as servants. I voted for you. I put your ass in office. You're going to freaking listen to me, okay? In Washington, D.C., oh, yes. The bureaucrats treat them like royalty. The lobbyists whine and dine them, literally whine and dine them, not figuratively. They take, if you want to go to some of the most expensive restaurants in the world, go to Washington, D.C. You'll see senators and House representatives there, and they're not paying for any of the meals. The lobbyist that they're with is picking up the check. Okay, they're literally wined and dined there. They're treated like royalty. And then all of a sudden, their heads just start getting bigger and bigger. And yeah, I guess I really am important. Oh my God, I'm a genius. Oh, everyone should listen to me. And because it's like Hollywood. What
makes you want to go back home after being pumped up like that all day?
Yeah. It's like Hollywood. Okay, you see this with actors and actresses all the time. Some of them actually believe their press releases.
No.
Okay. It's way before your time. But I assume you've heard of a TV show called Miami Vice.
Of course. Yep.
Okay. There are two guys, one white guy, one black guy. They were the duel. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they're, for that time, fabulous car that didn't exist in real world. They modified another car to look like it. But the black guy, I forget what his name is. Any one of your viewers can put it into in the comment. But he won an Emmy. And then he started to believe his own press releases. He, I think, literally said, I'm now going to win a Tony. I'm going to win an Oscar. Wow. Everyone made fun of him. Well, are you also going to cure cancer while you're at it? You know, I might as well just take on that little challenge there too. You know, hey, I hear there's a Nobel Prize that someone can possibly get. Why don't you get that one too? Everyone made fun of him. It actually destroyed his career because it was just hubris. He believed his press release. Right. And that's what happens in Washington, D.C. These senators and House representatives and the president starts believing their own press release. I mean, look at, I'm a libertarian. I've been a libertarian for 40 years, okay? I am not Republican. I'm not Democrat. I'm a libertarian. Card-carrying libertarian. Have voted for 40 years libertarian, okay? I'm just saying that so that what I'm about to say next, I'm not a Trumpeter. I don't know what you'd call Biden supporter.
Bidenomics, but look, maybe.
But look at Biden. He believes he's making statements now that even his own side go, oh my God, he actually said that.
Yeah.
He's saying that he was, I mean, it's just like he has dementia. Okay. But I think it's also fueled because everyone around said, oh, Biden, you're just fantastic. Everyone is worshiping you around. And how long can you resist that? Being human. I'm a big Clint Eastwood fan, okay? And Clint Eastwood talked about, he in interviews, he by the way, he's a libertarian, okay? He talks about Hollywood and why he was in Camel, California, not Hollywood, California, because he's more centered there. You talk about, there's some Hollywood actors and actresses that go get out of Hollywood to center themselves. We're really for your audience. I know this is probably too old for your audience, but Hugh Jackman, Wolverine. He's from Madison. Okay. Hmm. When I lived in Madison, I actually saw him in the clubs there. Okay.
Gotcha. Yep.
He and I had a lady friend of mine. She knew him directly. And he basically he's coming back here to get out of Hollywood because he's in Madison. He's just Hugh Jackman. Okay. He's not Wolverine. Okay. And there are some actors and actresses that do that to get them out of there because the press agents, their managers, the studios, the the reporters, the paparazzi, they treat them like royalty. And sometimes that does something in their head goes, I must be a walking god. Maybe they should worship me like a god. Kind of like if you read up on the history of Caesars, the rulers of Rome, sometimes it just went to their head and they literally had proclamations proclaiming them as gods. Okay. And I think that happens in Washington, D.C. It's just like Hollywood. They're there. Some of them, I don't think they mean it to happen to them, but it does. And some of them were that way before they even came. Because you can't be a politician running for Senate, not even a House representative, without having a massive ego, okay? And Washington, D.C. feeds that. And so what I'm doing with, I think it's Section 3.
Yes, we just wrapped up Section 3 on the last part.
Yeah, well, Section 3, and then we might as well do Section 4 here because they're both related. And Section 4, it says, each state's votes in the U.S. House of Representatives are equally divided amongst all of that state's current state assembly members. Each state current state assembly member is also a full member of the U.S. House of Representatives, and none of them can be compensated in any way or form for their service to the U.S. House of Representatives. What this does in these two things is it takes the Senate and gets rid of the senators. Magic trick. Poof, they're gone. We give those votes, essentially, to the governors, which, oh my gosh, what are state senators to do? They are to represent their whole state. What are governors? They literally do represent their whole state. There's only one governor in each state. So they're already representing their state. What I'm just doing is giving them a say in the Senate. And I feel this is where, and then I'm for the House of Representatives, I'm eliminating them and taking their votes. Say you have a state that has 10 votes in the House of Representatives. Their state assembly has 100 members. Each one of them, those 100 members then gets 1/10 of a vote in the House of Representatives. So when they vote, 0.1% of a vote is what they control. So they vote for something and eventually this adds up to whatever it's going to be. It's going to be a fractionals, okay? But we'll find out what's more popular. Well, what those two things do, those things there is, well, let's use the easier one when I talk to people about this, is the governor. Right now, every governor represents their state. I don't think there's a single governor that would not say, oh, I don't represent my state. That's your whole point, okay? Okay. So the point of the U.S. senators was to send a representative from that state to the U.S. Senate so they could represent the interests of that state in the U.S. Senate. Well, now with Zoom technology, okay, telecommunication technology, the telephone, whatever is needed to be voted on, the governors can do that. And the governors have a very vested interest in whatever bill is passed by the U.S. Senate because that's going to affect their state. I mean, I don't know of a single governor that does not have an opinion on whatever law is going through the U.S. Senate because they know that directly will affect their state. And there's been many, many governors come out and speak out on what they are for or against that bill, et cetera, if you ask them. And they were informed on it. Well, this just gives them like, no, you really do have now the vote in it. You have a 1/5th of the power, 1/50th of the power of the U.S. Senate. Basically, instead of having two U.S. senators, you have one senator, and that's the current governor. The U.S. senators are represent the state. The governors do represent that state. But here's the neat thing about it. U.S. senators are only federal politicians. How can they affect the world? There's only one option for them. We'll pass a federal law. Governors are like, we could. Or we have this little thing called a state law that I have far more impact on than I would ever have in the Senate. I am one governor as opposed to one out of 50 governors in the U.S. Senate.
Right.
So, and then not all states, there's no state almost. Unlike European countries, where basically they're the same. United States is vastly different. You go from East Coast to West Coast, North to South. We have literal swamps in Florida. We have a desert in Texas. We have a coastline on the West Coast, another different coastline on the East Coast. We have redwood forests. We have the Badlands. We have the fertile. We have the Midwest. What was it called? The Grain Belt. This country, while as a whole is the United States, it is truly United States. We are very different places. In what works in one state might not work in another state.
Right.
Okay. Hurricanes are a big deal for the Southeast.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much for anywhere else. Maybe a little bit of Texas if it wasn't actually kind of got away and got to them. Okay.
Sure.
But the Midwest, couldn't give a shit about hurricanes.
Yep.
However, the Midwest, tornadoes. Yeah, we pay attention to tornadoes, okay?
Hail.
We have tornado shelters. You go to any, if you're traveling through the Midwest, you go to a rest area, you'll literally see where it says this part is the tornado shelter. So if there's tornado warning, et cetera, which is alarms go off, gigantic sirens, your radio will be interrupted saying there is a tornado warning. And so you head into that rest area, I've done this. As a trucker, when I was growing up and traveling around, we all went into, I think it was always a women's restroom for whatever reason, but everyone stayed in there until the warning was the clear single went out, and then you left. Are there tornadoes on the East Coast in Florida? Water spouts, maybe, okay, but not like what the Midwest has. They really don't give a shit about tornadoes. Okay. In San Francisco, they have a little concern about things called earthquakes. And you talk to a California long term when they're talking about earthquakes and they're not even fazed by it. Well, yeah, we had one. Yeah, shook them up. But when they have a really bad one, well, we all see the results with the cameras. But Midwesterners, do they care about earthquakes? No. No more than they care about hurricane.
Yeah.
Right. So all these different states have all their different needs. And the governors are just for that state. And so they might go, well, we can handle this in the state level. And just like with the state assembly members, they're all now in my plan. They're also members of the House of Representatives. And so you have these people that have the ability to make two types of laws, a state law and a federal law. Well, there are, oh my God, I worked out the stats for what it is. There are 5,512 state assembly members.
Wow.
Okay. Right now there is 435 U.S. House of Representatives. So you're talking about them having less impact, okay? So if you have these state assembly members who are also House of Representative members, if you have governors who are also state senators, where do they feel that they have the most impact? On their own state law. There's fewer of them Absolutely. That have to vote for a state law. And also you have these two people who can make both laws, state and federal, which they don't now, okay, it's separated. But now they're going to, I feel, they're logically just going to say, which one would be better handled at the federal level and which one better handled at the local level, state level? And because they have more influence on state laws than they will have ever on federal laws, their tendency would be like, let's do this at our state level.
And you'd have to drag in a bunch of impartials from other states to get on your bandwagon to help your state out. It would be a lot right. more of a burden. Yeah.
You have to get a majority of 5,512. Where instead, if you have a state assembly that has 100 members, well, you probably know all of them individually. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's no way you're going to know 5,512 state assembly members.
Correct.
And also, they're not in your state capital. Okay, they're spread all over. You got some up in Alaska. You got ours way over in that little thing called Hawaii. Okay, they're all over, which, by the way, I love it because lobbyists are just going to have a heart attack with this thing because their influence is just, I don't know. I won't kill off the lobbyists, but I'll make it a hell of a job for them now. Okay, they can't wine and dine them. What are you going to do? Send out 50 lobbyists to... And then, well, there's 100 state assembly members in that state, and other states have even more than 100. How many are you going to, you know, how are you going to influence that? So you have more, and they're also representing, those state assembly members are representing a little state, a little section of their state, okay? And it's just, by this alone, you'll see a reduction of the federal government. Okay. Now, what would be left of the federal government? I think three things would be left of the federal government. There will be the military, there will be the State Department, and there will be the Treasury. And I think that's about it. A lot of the agencies, there was at one time a need for the FBI. There isn't anymore. There was one time when... There was basically the FBI crime lab was basically the crime lab of the country. All major states have their own crime labs now. I mean, my gosh, they have TV shows talking about, Dexter and all these, there are different little crime labs that they have. So you don't really need them anymore. And also I think there's the Justice Department and the FBI. Is my personal opinion that they've been weaponized. They've been made into political weapons, and they've always been used as political weapons. If you go back and read the history of the FBI and how they've been abused by one and Democrat, Republican, doesn't matter. They use it against their.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what you're seeing right now with it and the Justice Department is no better. And I think for my amendment, oh my God, it is a blessing as far as my amendment goes, because it just shows that the Justice Department is a political weapon. The FBI is a political weapon. And there's really no need for them. I've talked to constitutional lawyers about this amendment. And I've asked them.
I was going to ask you that. Okay.
I've asked them, is there any need for the FBI or the Justice Department? And not one of them says, no, there's no need for them. There really isn't. And it can be handled... But anyways, this gets them, the power goes back to the states. And now you have politicians can make both federal and state laws. And they have most influence on their state laws. So I think the only thing that's going to be at the federal level is the ones that are like, well, we can't do it. We can't do this here in our state. U.S. military. Although I think the U.S. military is going to be drastically changed by the states. Because right now we have, forget how many, I should look that up for later interviews. I forget how many thousands of military bases we have overseas.
Is it around 40 something 100? I thought I saw at some point. It's somewhere in the thousands for sure.
And the thing of it is that there are different levels to what a military base is considered.
Absolutely.
A lot of people don't understand that every U.S. embassy is essentially a military embassy. Mm. They're not cops. I think, what are they, Marines? The ones that do the U.S. embassies? Is that the Marines?
That doesn't sound right, but it's not a just army officer. It's a...
Yeah, they have... Training. But it is we have, and so there's also, and there's bases, then there are, they have so many, I was in the military, there are so many different levels to what you call it, but there are soldiers everywhere, okay? Mm-hmm. And this is with the United States being the political police, the global policeman that the federal politicians want to be, because this is how they can shine, okay? You have to understand, a lot of our being a global policeman is because the federal politicians want to say, hey, look what I can do. You know, I'm not insignificant, you know, and at least I can do is send them money. You know, I mean, it's the cheapest thing they can do. We'll send you money. Oh, we'll have soldiers over there because they want press. They want coverage. That's how they get reelected. Everything's about being reelected. But if you take them over to the governors, where the governors are like, I think a lot of governors are going like, this isn't our problem. I'm dealing with so much shit in my own state. I don't want to take care of the shit in your country.
I couldn't agree more. I think that sounds, I think it would definitely lead to a reduction. I would hope that would be the immediate reaction to
it. Well, I think what's going to happen is that a lot of the state and governors and the state assembly members are going to be looking at how much are we spending overseas here. You know, if we move those soldiers back to my state, that might be a positive impact on my state. You know, it's a job. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then you bring them back, and then do you really need a standing army in states? And the truth of the matter is, you really don't. But what do you need in every state? Almost every single state, a National Guard. And a National Guard serves a real purpose, because they're activated when shit hits the fan. Okay? They're the first ones activated. I mean, the National Guard in the Florida, probably the most proficient National Guard in the military, because every time a hurricane comes in, they're like, okay, I'll see you later, dear. You know, I mean, but in the Midwest, we have blizzards, and the National Guard will get out, and they'll use those military trucks. They can go through anything, and I've seen it happen, where they'll just go out, and they'll do whatever needs. A tornado goes down, it's not the cops. National Guard shows up, and they have big signs that say looters will be shot, and who's going to shoot them is the National Guard, and you don't mess with the National Guard, because they're dealing with all other shit that's going on this time. So the National Guard, hurricane, earthquakes, tornadoes, any natural disaster, the National Guard is activated. Mississippi floods, the National Guard is active. Not the National Guard. People don't. I think we need to have a different name for them. Maybe like the State Guard would be a better one.
Maybe makes sense. Yeah.
State Guard, because when you say National Guard, like, oh, everyone's coming in. No, it's just your state.
It's the state's National Guard.
National Guard.
It's hard to explain.
Yeah, because the governor is actually the head of the state National Guard, which is kind of weird because, wait, they're National Guard, but you're the state governor. But every state National Guard answers to the governor, and it's the governor that activates them. You know, everyone's waiting for the governor. I'm from Platteville, Wisconsin, right near the Mississippi. I lived for many years in Dubuque. We have floodgates, literal floodgates in Dubuque, that will shut when the river gets too high. And people go down there to watch it. And then you go up on the, I think it's called Dyka, and you see the height of the Mississippi River, and then you see the low ground, ground on the other side, and you're going, boy, I really hope that gate holds up, you know, because mm-hmm. I mean, if that were break, it would flood the entire downtown area. But who does that? That's the state's National Guard.
Right.
And they're out there doing sandbags. They're out there. They're the ones driving around in the boats, getting people that have been stranded. They're doing they're doing stuff that people don't like talking about, but they're doing the corpse recovery. Yep. You know, it's just part of their job. Every National Guard has what we would call coroners in the civilian world. Okay. They're the ones that go out and get the body. They bring them back. Now, they turn them usually over to a local coroner, but someone's got to get the body, right. You know? And the sheriff and the local police, they got their hands full, okay? And the National Guard can bring in big machinery. I mean, you watch them when they're on the move. There's convoy going in. And those trucks are, they have the exhaust pipes way up, so they can just, they don't care. They're right in through the waters. And those trucks are designed to literally be bolts. But anyways, I think what's going to happen is when those soldiers are brought back, I think a lot of the governors and the state assembly members are going to be going like, we really don't need a standing army, but we really would like to have
them. You could bolster the National Guard. Yeah.
So I think like the National Guard is going to be increased. And so every state is going to have a much more robust and fuller National Guard. And that way, and then if we're ever attacked, we're never going to be attacked. There's just, I know some people talk about, oh, we need a U.S. military in case someone attacks us. No one's going to attack the United States. And this is not being bravado. This is not rah-rah United States, you know, oh, you're just a vet. No. The United States can never be attacked and defeated. It's literally impossible. You can nuke us, and we're still undefeatable. Okay? We have more guns in the private sector than we have in the military. Okay? I'm a vet. Okay? You know how many millions of vets are out there? You think I forget how to use what I was taught when I was in the military? You think we have dementia? Oh, I walked out. Oh, I don't know what that is. Oh, that's called a gun. Oh, my God. What makes it go? Oh, that's a trick. We know how it operates, okay? You see them at the firing ranges, okay? So you have this huge population of veterans who all own guns, who are showing off each other's their guns, okay? They have their own little arsenals. They go out hunting. And if you really want to think about it, back in history, the first colonial army was just basically hunters.
Yeah, okay. It was all a bunch of hometowners that formed their own. Yeah.
Right, and the rifles they used hunt is rifles they used against the British.
Correct.
Okay?
Yeah.
Our guns are just better. And so we have two oceans that protect us on either side. We have a Navy that by law has to have 11 carriers, okay, which is more aircraft carriers than all the rest of the world combined. Okay. Now maybe we should reduce down that. I would not be disfavor of that. But you know, I think a lot for as well. Well, if we go on with the section of the, I think the next section here.
Section 5. Yep.
Section 5. Well, section 5 and section 6, I think, should be done together because they basically are go doing this. Section 5 is the U.S. president must physically visit every state in the Union and U.S. territory at least once a year. Section 6 is the White House is no longer the residence or office of the U.S. president. Capitol Hill, the Capitol Hill building is no longer a functional building of the U.S. Congress, and both are made national monuments and turned over to the Smithsonian Institution for preservation, historical research, and public tours. The District of Columbia is stripped of its federal status and returned to the state of Maryland, and this kills Washington, D.C.
It gets rid of it. Yeah,
gets rid of it. Whenever I show this map to everyone, the most popular one, Section 5. Okay. For the president to go out and visit every state at least once a year. Whoops, did I?
I lost your video there for a second, Jack.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I don't know if you could still see me. No worries.
Oh, here. Let me see. I'll see if I can restart it.
There you are.
There we go. Whoop. There. The sections before have removed the importance of Washington, D.C. Section 5 and 6 eliminates out Washington, D.C. They can't come back. And what's going to happen with Section 5 is, I'll tell you what's going to happen. I'm willing to buy everything. If this memo were to pass, I will willing to bet everything I ever own or will ever own. Every president is going to spend it 1 week in every state. Doesn't matter if they're a Republican president, it's a Democratic state, they're going to spend 1 week in every state. And even if it's a Democratic state and the president is a Republican or vice versa, if that president doesn't spend 1 week in their state, that state is going to scream bloody murder. Because why does New York get more attention than we do? Or California, you know, even a small North Dakota, Wyoming, they're going to freak out if the president doesn't spend a week in their state. And even the politicians, like right now, Republican states want Biden to come to their state because it will give the nation will pay attention to their state for 1 week. The governor will have the ear of the president for 1 week. He'll take them around, showing them the things in his state. It's going to be for 1 week. Right. That state is going to
for his election tour. Yep.
His election tour, but he's going to show off the state. The president is, unless he's a moron, he's going to meet at minimum with the state assembly members. If he's a political moron, he won't also meet with their state senators. I mean, you just have them all together and just talk to them, have a session with them, have them so they can talk to the president and the president can answer their questions, or if, because it gives them a chance to have the president's ear for a week. Even if they're violently opposed, I'm sure there's going to be Democrats. If Trump gets reelected, which I'm pretty sure he will be, again, I didn't vote for him in 2016, 2020. I'll be voting libertarian in 2024, but Trump's going to get reelected. There's just, I don't see any way that he will not get, the only way he will not get elected is if they assassinate him. Okay. That's the only way Trump won't get elected. But I will tell you, in New York State, even the most anti-Trump state assembly member and governor, while they may say, I don't want Governor Trump in my state, they'll damn well expect him to be in their state for a week. Mm. You know, because they want the media attention. Well, I don't like him. I don't like him. Just doing that. But behind the scenes, they're going like, thank you for coming, Mr. President. A lot of these politicians.
They came for the state. Yep.
Yeah, and they'll play for the cameras behind the scenes. Hopefully, they'll act like adults. Hey, thanks for coming here and so on. And everyone will be civil and polite. I think we should have maybe the adults return to the room. And I think governors are going to be the adults in the room. I think the governors are already the adults in the room. And by giving them the powers of the Senate, they're going to finally have
to say it would actually be able to prove that claim. Yeah.
Yeah, and the president's not going to be flippant to the governors at all. He can be flippant to them now because, well, they don't make federal law.
They don't really do anything that affects his daily duties.
Okay, but you give the Senate, you give 1/5 of the power of the Senate to each governor. Mm. Now I got to see the president kissing some ass. Okay, he's going to be calling up, hey, Senator, how's the wife and kids? You know, so the. And vice versa, the governors, it's all about, and also think about this thing too. You want to be president today. There's really only three ways to be president today, realistically. Okay. You're either a governor or former governor. You're either a senator or you're a former senator. Or on the way things, these once in a lifetime things like Trump. Like Eisenhower, okay, once in a lifetime individuals that come along, you know. So in reality, there's really only two realistic ways for you to become. Those are Eisenhower being a five-star general for World War II.
You can
doesn't happen a lot, okay. Yeah. Multi-billionaire who became a reality star, CEO of a major multinational corporation, kind of rare. Okay. You talk to a lot of them, and I've met lots of being a marketer. I've met a lot of very rich people, and they have as much personality as a slice of white bread, soggy. Okay. They don't, they, they have coaches to try to give their annual speech to stockholders, and they fall on their faces all the time. Trump, he's a showman, okay, but he's always been that way. I know the liberals like to say, oh, he's just a reality star. No, he was a successful real estate mogul. That's what he was. That's what The Apprentice was all about. You're trying to compete to be his, you know, assistant. That was the whole point. And he's being brutal. Okay. You're seeing brutal. He was representing brutal corporate culture. You're fired. Okay. Not gonna softball this. I don't have the time. You're out. Okay. Now it became something else, but that was the ascent. That was the initial pitch. Hey, you get to win a chance to be his apprentice, I think for a year was the whole thing. You get to follow him around for a year. Okay. Now we're into something else where you have celebrities, Penn Jillette, et cetera, where they're never going to be his apprentice. They're just want to be fired by him. But that's what Trump was. He was, he was rich. He was from a rich family. But and I tell people that rip on him, and I didn't vote for him. Okay. But yes, he was a multimillionaire. He became multi-billionaire. Okay. And anyone who bitches about him, oh, he just had everything given to him. Oh, so you're a multimillionaire. They're like, what? Oh, you're a multimillionaire, right? You have no problem. You're a multi. Well, and they all, I never encountered one that says it. Like, no. But you have thousands of dollars, right? Right in your checking account. I have thousands of dollars. Well, so why aren't you turning that into millions? Okay. Because you can turn $1,000 into millions just as easy. You can turn millions of dollars into billions. They're just three decimal points.
Just different figures. Yep.
Right. So, yeah, he was going to leg up, but the art of the deal, I read that one in the 80s when he put that on out. Okay. He was already a star. The reality show just came later. Okay. Right. And because of the art of the deal, because he was a celebrity going
around. It only happened now because he was a celebrity before that. Yeah.
Right. Right. But he's like Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Very rare instance.
Yeah, just like the guy, how do you pronounce his name? Down in Argentina. How do you pronounce his name?
Is it it's some with an M. I can't think of it right now.
Manly? Yeah.
It might be.
But he's another one that will only come once.
Oh, that's what it is. It's Malay, I believe.
Yeah. He was a sports star.
Yeah.
That's what he was famous for. He was already famous. And so, and he just ran with it. Okay. But normally you have governors and senators, either currently serving or retired, who are running for the presidency. Right. Now, my thing makes it. A lot of people say, and I had this criticism just yesterday on Twitter, these clowns can't pass anything right now. Mm. You think they're going to pass this? My God, these guys can't even get daylight savings done, changed. Mm. And I said, yes. But you see, I'm not depending on their good nature. I'm depending on their bad nature. Mm. I'm not expecting these politicians to make this, to adopt this amendment because they think it's good for the country. Oh, shit, they don't give. These people, I honestly don't think maybe they do. But I think they are more concerned about their political career than this country.
Okay. They're much more concerned about their own well-being, you're saying, than compared to the country's. Okay.
I'm appealing not to their good nature. I'm appealing to their bad nature. I'm giving them an opportunity.
Giving them more opportunity to have state power.
This is a power grab by the governors, by the state assembly members. This is the governor is getting basically the power of two U.S. senators. Mm-hmm. The state assembly members are getting the power, a fraction of it though, but still power in the U.S. House of Representatives. But I'm talking about power grab for the U.S. senators. The U.S. senators going to want this, okay? Mm-hmm. It's a power grab. Right now, they're in the U.S. Senate, they have 1/100th of the power of the U.S. Senate. My amendment makes that, my amendment doubles it. They now have 1/50th of the power of the U.S. Senate. And they have the governorship. The only thing they have to do is beat their state governor. Yeah, but take a look at these. Again, remember what I said? There's not a politician that runs that doesn't have a huge ego. Well, look at these U.S. senators.
Right.
They've already won a statewide election. That's how they became senators. What's the difference between a statewide election for a senator and a statewide election for a governor?
I love that.
Nothing. So you don't think for a second, let's take the biggest asshole in the U.S. Senate, or we can talk about, I'm a big fan of Rand Paul, but what is an asshole in the U.S. Senate? Can you think of one?
McConnell.
Okay. Well, I think, to be honest about it, I think McConnell will, if this amendment passes, I think McConnell will retire. He's just getting.
No need. Yeah, no need. No need to continue the suffering.
No. Oh, but also, he leaves on a high note. He leaves as the last president of the U.S. Senate as it was then.
Right.
He has every incentive to make this state's First Amendment happen because he will not.
It was him.
His legacy. Can you name me the president of the Senate 3 presidents ago?
Not very honestly.
But can you name the last of something? I mean, this becomes okay. McConnell has a chance to be a Jeopardy question,
right?
Who was the last president of the U.S. Senate before it was the first a state's First Amendment happened? Oh, that'd be Mitch McConnell. He is now a Jeopardy question. Mm-hmm. But if this thing passes after he's already been it. No one's going to say, well, who was the second president of the Senate before it was? No one cares about that. They care about who was the last one. For his legacy, he will be the last one. Okay, mm-hmm. So he has the incentive to do that, just like who was ever the Speaker of the House has the incentive to be, because he will be a Jeopardy question. He will have legacy. He will literally be taught in history books. His name or her name, but I already don't know who it is. The Republicans have had a revolving door in that thing so far. But whoever's but think about that. Think of that right now with the Speaker of the State Assembly. They're playing musical chairs.
Mm-hmm.
The last one in the seat becomes the last Speaker of the State Assembly before the first state's First Amendment happened. They go down in history.
Yep.
Okay, they have legacy. Okay, that gives that person an incentive to pass this, because otherwise you're just one of a long string and everyone forgets it. You know, there might be some that might be remembered, like Tip O'Neill. Okay, but he was an extraordinary character. But all the other ones, will they remember Nancy Pelosi? Maybe first, I think, female Speaker of the State Assembly. But it's not as good as being the last Speaker of the House. So all this does is it gives. I'm not playing to their good nature. I'm playing to their bad. I'm playing to them wanting to have power, more power. This is a power grab, and the states have a wonderful little mechanism in the Constitution for this: a constitutional convention.
Correct.
They just have to take that little thing up, going, how it could be just a tiny little flag. Oh, if you don't do this, we might just call a constitutional convention. Now you have the U.S. House of Representatives and you have the U.S. Senate, because the Constitutional Convention does not require Congress's approval. Congress can't vote for it. The states can vote for it. I'm giving a power grab so every governor, they'll want to have this thing happen. State Assembly, they'll want to have it happen. Now, I had some people say, well, what about state senates? I don't give them power. But on the other hand, I think it's a good thing that maybe one body in each state is just focused on the state and not also on the federal government. So it wouldn't be that bad. Now, Nebraska, they have one chamber. But for all the other 49 states, they have a state senate and they have a state assembly. My amendment does not diminish the state Senate. I think it actually makes them, our interest is just for the state. We don't care about the federal government. So they're truly an advocate for the state. And so that's what it is. I mean, I'm playing on their best behaviors. I'm getting rid of Washington, D.C. Right now, they're talking about getting D.C. statehood or something like that. Nonsense like that. Yep. Just if you strip away their statehood, they're just part of Maryland. And they'll vote like Maryland. And I bet you, and Annapolis is the state capital of Maryland. I bet you 10 to 1, they're not going to move the state capital to D.C.
Right.
Do you think the Maryland state politicians are going to want to have the stigma of D.C. on them? No, they're going to be like, no, we're Annapolis is just fine. And anyone says, oh, no, it's the biggest city. There are many states where the biggest city is not the state capital. Wisconsin, Milwaukee is huge. Madison's small. Yep. You know, Illinois, Chicago's huge. And what is the state capital? Des Moines? No. But I mean, a lot of states, their biggest city is not their state capital.
Correct.
So I don't think that's going to be an issue with them. And then I guess we might as well tap on the last section.
Yeah, let's hit the last section real quick, and then I think we can hit a few round out questions. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, the last section is kind of long. It says,
and it is a little different. I will preface the viewers; it's a little different compared to looking directly at the states. So go ahead.
Right, this is what makes states. Okay. Any country can become a U.S. territory if its population is larger than the U.S. state with the smallest population. Landmass is larger than the U.S. state with the smallest landmass, and 2/3 in an open and free nationwide referendum vote to do so. Population and landmass exceptions can be granted by a supermajority, 60% or better, vote in both chambers of Congress. After 5 years as a U.S. territory, U.S. territory can become a state if at least 2/3 of its population can read, write, and converse in American English to an 8th grade level, and at least 2/3 vote in favor of an open and free territory-wide referendum. And U.S. territory can secede from the USA by a simple majority vote in an open and free territory-wide referendum. This thing, I put this in just because right now we do have a process for making territories, land, into territories, and territories into the states. But a lot of, I consider, unethical politics get involved with that. Utah is a perfect example of this. They had to outlaw polygamy before the Utah territory would be accepted as a state, even though it's part of their religion. And they still disobey it to this day. But I think that is, and I think, I'm not saying the whole world is going to unite with us, et cetera, but I tell you what, every country that unites with us, I think gets us one step closer to a world that has no wars anymore. And the whole world doesn't have to unite with us. I mean, I think there are many countries. It was interesting. There was a poll in Russia when they collapsed. They took a poll and they asked, would you want to join the United States? And I think the majority of people wanted to. Now, that's not saying they would do that today. But like in Puerto Rico, they took a recent, I think even a referendum, and the majority were in favor of statehood. I think a lot of countries would benefit from our political system and how it operates.
Especially if it was brought in naturally by their own government and their own people.
Right. And that's why I have the
regime change.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. I don't want that. Oh, and if you think about what I just read,
this your amendment disincentivizes the regime change aspect, because you could simply just lobby them and start to raise their education standards. And there you have the qualifications for a territory.
And 2/3 prevents a civil war within that nation, because 2/3 are voting in favor. I also have it so that if you're a U.S. territory, you only have to have a simple majority to leave. So it's easier to leave than to join. I think making it harder to join is actually a better way of doing it and making it easier to leave. Because basically we're saying, you know, like the old phrase, love it or leave it, you know, that type of thing. But this one says, would you really like to join us? you know, and not just have a simple majority, which could cause possibly a civil war. It puts it up to 2/3, and maybe they'll never reach that, but it is a chance. But there are some countries right now
that would
leave. I think if they were given the option, probably they would take it. I think right now, to be honest about it, if this were to happen, I don't. Ukraine, I think, would have a referendum and they'd join. Now that, you know, we can talk about the reality of Russia and China, et cetera, when it comes to military. But I think there are many countries that have very, very flawed governments. And where the people, I mean, this way, we don't have a problem attracting people. We have a problem attracting too many people, okay? To some people. I think I'm a libertarian. I think we should have much more open borders. I think we should, when my ancestors came over in the 18th century, I think it's 18th or 17th century, basically, were you a criminal? Did you have an incurable disease? That was what you were rejected on. And anything about it was like in Ellis Island, a lot of people don't realize that if you came with a disease that was curable, we didn't turn you away. We sent you to a hospital ward and got you cured. And then said, oh, come on in. You know, a lot of people were concerned about the Palestinians, though, coming over here. Palestine, if the entire population of Palestine came, 2 million. We're a country of 331 million. You add 2 million to that. 2 million represents 0.06% of our, I think it's 0.06% of our population. They're not going to control anything. Could they all go to Michigan? Yeah, there's a huge Palestinian population in Dearborn. But they would only represent 17% of that state's population. And you know the other, the other part is not going to allow them to take over that state. Okay, we're a melting pot. Anyone that's anti-immigration, first of all, unless you have an Indian name, you're an immigrant. You're the descendants of immigrants. And if you're Irish, read about how your ancestors were treated in this country. We treated Irish horribly. In Dubuque, Iowa, there's a theater called Five Flags Theater. I took a tour of it. Beautiful theater. We went up, 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 and then at the very top balcony, nothing. Bare wood. Benches, literally just wooden benches. Nothing special. Not even varnish on them. Okay? That's where the Irish had to go. The Germans wouldn't accept them. Reason, you look back at the box, you want to know who the minority is in a country, in the United States, who's the current, what race or ethnicity is the current boxers? Look at the history of boxing. Irish used to dominate it.
Absolutely. Especially in the early, what is it, the 30s? 20s and 30s?
Okay. Hopefully we'll learn from that and treat other people. We're a melting pot. We can. America is truly an unbelievable country. There'll probably never be one like it ever again. We are such a melting pot. We have our rough edges. We don't have a perfect history, but we correct that. We work on that.
Absolutely.
You know, with this thing here, might there be countries that we don't want them to join us? But think what would happen if a lot of countries did join us. They have to, they're joining us. We're not joining them. Our political system is now their political system. I mean, you look at African countries. You look at dictatorships, military dictatorships. Just, we would be a breath of fresh air, I believe, for them. And you know, would there be some countries that never join? Oh yeah, Japan will never join. Japan hates all of them. Truth matter, I love Japan. I love Japanese women. I consider them the hottest. but they're never going to join any other country. Mm-hmm. They are sorry, good but problem. They are one of, so wow, well, they're very racist. Mm-hmm. And white Americans like you and I do not understand. I had a girl from Shanghai, China, long-term relationship with her. And they knew they could spot who was Chinese, Japanese, Korean on the spot, you know. And they're Chinese are extremely racist. They are. They don't care. You go there, they make no qualms about it. No blacks allowed. They have right on their signs. They don't care. That's why the movies that go over there, they hide, if not even, if they have a black leading actor or something like that, they'll hide them. You know, like a Star Wars movie, there was a black actor and they reduced down his role. The Little Mermaid, they made her skin look blue. But anyways, I'm just saying that
there's a certain amount of countries that just
would not join. Japan would never join anyone else. Obviously the Vatican would never join anyone else. They love their special status. There are countries, but then there are other countries that are just, I think, would be very much wanting to come and you know, basically they get to cheat. they don't have to come up with our government. Let's just use, I mean, right now in Africa, there's a country called Liberia. Okay. Mm-hmm. They right now call themselves the 51st state. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's where we send all our slaves to. That's why it's called Liberia, means liberty. That's where we send our slaves to after the Civil War. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Abraham Lincoln, he didn't think blacks and whites could get along. And he was in favor of deporting them back to Africa.
Right.
Okay. I don't have that. I mean, I had another long-term relationship with a woman from Cameroon, Africa, and she was as dark as the artwork behind you. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't have that aspect to myself. I don't, I more appreciate my best friend in college was from Pakistan. He was a Muslim. Mm-hmm. And one of the nicest guys I've ever met, you know, and I like our cultures. Not everyone does, but I think if more countries were to join the United States as states, maybe the idea of a world war would just disappear because you can't take on too many. So that's why that last part takes out the politics out of what can become a state. Also, I believe that you should be able to speak the language. A majority of the people in your country should be able to converse with the major language of the country you're joining. And also shows,
it's fair to say.
And it also shows a determination. You actually do want to join. You want to assimilate.
You want to assimilate, yeah.
You want to assimilate. And I believe that is the key. But, you know, go to New York. There are Orthodox Jews enclaves, which is literally what they call them, that they're there. They're not assimilating. They don't want to assimilate. The Amish don't want to assimilate. Okay. And to me, that's fine. You know, just, you know, I guess I'd rather have a way that if a country, especially a country that is having really problems politically and would have dictatorships, et cetera, and we're given a chance to join and not go back into the next dictatorship, I'd like to give them that opportunity to go, hey, yeah, let's just, can I join here? Can I now become a citizen? And all right, here we have, a lot of people don't understand our constitution is, I think, the longest existing constitution in the world, is it?
I believe it has to be, because I believe we were, I don't know if we were the first, but we were definitely
France. France has had so many, it's ridiculous. It's like the changing of the seasons for France. I mean, they even had just a recently one. It's like, okay, I guess, you know, in our country here, reason why I advocate for our country being the country is because of our First Amendment. We are the only Correct. Country in the world that has a First Amendment that's a constitutional right and is protected by an independent judiciary.
Correct.
No other country in the world has that. No other country. I mean, I've had people say, well, Sweden has that as constitutional. Yep. And they outlaw blasphemy. Okay.
Well, that's
United Kingdom, portion. Australia, New Zealand. You can get arrested for a tweet.
Yep.
I tell that to Americans, and some of them are like, mm-hmm. you know, they don't, no, that's not true. Yes, it's true. And then they go, and you should see their faces. They're like, you know, yeah, you're telling me a bunch of, holy shit. Mm-hmm. They're like,
right.
You, and it's just, yeah. And that's why it's our First Amendment. It's why it's our most important amendment. And it's what makes us separate from all the countries in the world.
Correct.
Parliamentary countries. If you want to take to an American audience, a parliamentary country, take away the presidency, take away the U.S. Senate. Mm-hmm. The U.S. House of Representatives is your government.
And they run everything.
The Speaker of the State Assembly, like we have right now, the Speaker of the House. Okay, that'd
be your Prime Minister.
That'd be your Prime Minister, elected by the majority of mm-hmm. the House. Okay. The judiciary serves at their whim. The parliamentary system has all power in Parliament. If the judiciary passes a law that the Parliament doesn't want, boom, law gone. We make it a pain in the ass to add an amendment to the Constitution. Okay? And we have an elaborate process, though, and our founding fathers made it because they want to be really hard. Do we make mistakes? Oh, yeah, we outlawed alcohol. That was a big mistake. And then we corrected it. Mm-hmm. Okay? And there are many amendments out. My amendment might forever be out there for all those amendments that never happened. And it could very well be. Again, I think my amendment has a chance because it enables governors and state assembly members, state governments to make a power grab. That's the only reason I believe it has a chance of succeeding. Honestly, no other reason. Not for the merits of it, not for anything. The only reason my amendment would pass is because it's a power grab by the states. But I have their power grab done in such a way that decentralizes power and makes it more to what our founding fathers wanted, a smaller federal government focused on defense, diplomacy, and the treasury. And even the treasury might change. We don't have to have a U.S. dollar. Every state can have their own dollar. People don't understand that the dollar wasn't in existence forever. Okay. We have many different currencies. Now, Americans might not understand this, but if anyone of your audiences are out in the rest of the world, okay, mm-hmm. every European nation used to have their own currency.
Right.
Okay. Today you have a credit card. Okay. You don't have to worry about the exchange rate because your credit card company automatically makes it for you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we could have different, every state could have their own currency, or the states might go, you know what, it'd probably be cheaper for us to just use one.
Just use the dollar.
Yeah, just use the dollar. You know, I think that's where it will be. That's why I think the Treasury will still exist, but I think the mm-hmm. Federal Reserve will be gone. I think they will get rid of the Federal Reserve. But I think the Treasury will still exist. So do you have any questions you had?
So before we end the regular show, I did just want to say, so do you have links? Do you have anywhere that we can go and support this? Is there anything that we can do as a people to go
best thing right now,
shout it out?
The best thing right now is just my Twitter account. Okay. It's just Jack T. Decker, at Jack T. Decker. I'm not... If you go to that, you'll see a link, and it's a link to the amendment, but it's just that's all it is. It's just the amendment. I commonly post the amendment in replies on Twitter. I'm letting this thing grow organically. Mm. I'm not trying to force it much. I used to pay like $50 a shot when I was posting the amendment, and then something that about it, like today saying with the passage of it, only departments of defense, state, and treasury would be existent. And I tossed. But once I hit 500 followers, I stopped doing that. Mm. And now it's growing. I knew that I need to have a certain mass, and then it would start to grow from that point on. And I'm almost up to 600 now without spending any money. I'm getting on like on your show. I've already been on another show, although we got lost as a vet. And we got lost on talking about vet stuff. I just went just a whole show tangent laughing. Yeah. And I'm gonna be on his show again so we can do what we just did on your mm-hmm. show. But notice that I have I don't want to give his name, and I actually posted a tweet saying, "Hey, I got a very popular YouTuber who wants to interview me on a show." And huge YouTuber,
cool.
But I had to have a million followers on Twitter before he would have me on a show.
There you go. All right.
So
go follow JT Jack T Decker.
Yeah, I appreciate you
over on X now. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and X, I think that was a mistake by everyone still calls it Twitter. Everyone still calls it Twitter. What do you call a tweet on X?
It's still a tweet.
Yeah, it's still a tweet. And do you know even on my browser, it still flips between X and the little bird. Yeah. It still flips. Now, is this gonna still be on the public show?
Yeah, this is all regular. Yep.
Okay, folks. If you switch over to, if you sign up for the mailing list, is that what they have to do?
Yep. So all you got to do is just go sign right up for WeThePatriotsMedia.com. Yep.
Okay. Folks, you go over there, and because it's a little bit more selective, and if he wants to, I've been a 30-year marketer, folks. I can tell you exactly how it's going to go with the election, and you might want to have some fun with that. And we can also reference it back to the amendment and how the amendment is going to affect elections. And I was going to tell that, but we can leave that for the second part. But no, what I want to do is I want to get to a million followers. I'm doing podcasts now. I'm not approaching radio or TV talk shows because, you know, let's say that I'm a blacksmith, mm-hmm. and I'm hammering this thing on out with you.
I think it's good for you to talk about it too and get your thoughts out. I think right. It's very important.
Oh, I love Twitter. By the way, folks, if you go to Twitter and you don't like this, please go there and bring up all your objections to it, because that's where I will respond to it. I want people to point out weaknesses of it. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have, like one person thought that. The federal government had always regulated commerce between the states. And I said, well, no, that didn't happen until 1888, mm-hmm. you know, and just partially. And he was like, you know, what? You know, so it changed him, and now he's a supporter of it. But if you see weaknesses in this amendment, come there, challenge me. I'm not going to get upset with you. I'm not going to block you. I'm a libertarian. We don't. Any libertarian that blocks someone is not I don't think I'm a libertarian. I believe in freedom of speech. I don't believe in hate speech. Mm. I believe there's just speech. And if you have speech that you disagree with, I think the solution for bad speech is more speech, not censoring speech. Because that's how you, back. Yeah, you censor speech, and that person is still going to hold those beliefs. Let's talk about it, you know. And I might be wrong. I mean, I've been a libertarian for 40 years. And, you know, and before that, I mean, when I was young, real young, we're talking about, let's put it this way. When I was a kid, I was rooting for Gerald Ford over Carter. Okay. But then I served in the military, and that really woke me up to what a true totalitarian state is, which is what the military is. And it has to be. You have to understand what the military is. It's not a rip on it. They have to be this to be the military. They have to operate. Because, I mean, the Bill of Rights does not apply to soldiers. That's a lot of civilians don't No.
It's how could it to get through training, honestly?
Oh, no, just in the military alone. You know, when you're a soldier, you actually operate under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. You do not have freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of assembly. You don't have things that you don't even know is stuff that military, you don't have freedom of occupation. You have to take an aptitude test, and they will show you what you're qualified to apply for. If you don't have the score, you don't get that as an option to choose from. You want to talk about communism, from each his ability, each his need. That's how the military operates. But it has to, because it's a killing machine. And this is not a rip on it. This is what it is. Okay? It's not a peace machine. It's a killing machine that enables peace to happen. Because if you attack us, we will kill you. That's the promise of the U.S. military.
Right.
So I'm a veteran. Very proud to be a veteran. But I'm realistic what it is. So anyways, that and others type of stuff we may talk in the selective episode next. So if you're interested in that, I think I've given enough of a plug for it. Do you think, or should I toss some
I think more? We're all set. I think all set. Anybody else can go catch us over there. I mean, this is already a great show, Jack. I hope that I hope we have a connection here to get just some people just fired up about it. I love the fact that I was going on your Twitter. I see you replying to people, giving comments back and forth, whether they're supportive or not. And to be honest, I think that's where it comes from. The more action that we can get over on X now, like I said, I hope everybody goes and hops on there. If you heard every part of this amendment, if you want to go read it straight through parts 1 through 7, go get your looks on it, go comment on it. I'll plug the channel in the description as well. That way you can go tag him directly. And other than that, Jack, I hope you have a great rest of your day. We'll get on with our extra show, everybody else. I'ma make all these bitches say, damn, I wish I were the fucking state. I wanna be something, not nothing. Trapped inside my dream and I'm running away from these demons. But the feeling's so good, I'ma keep dreaming.